It's time for Product Genius with Tiffany Krumen.
Greetings and salutations. It's that time again. What time is it? It's time for the crowd to get... Come on, where are you guys? Let's go. Let's hit. There they are. A little late on the draw. It's almost like we've been recording multiple shows and everybody's getting a little tired, including... That's right. Including the studio audience. That noise wants me to remind you that sitting across from me is the star of the show.
Don't.
I'm always pushing, trying to see how far I can go until she finally tells me to leave and never come back. But I don't want that. I want to stay here and I want to learn more about being a product genius, which reminds me that the real star of the show is Tiffany Krumen's of TiffanyKrumens.com, MomGenius.com. Hey there, Tiffany!
The real star of the show are our specialists, are our geniuses that we bring in, and Noah McNeely has joined us again today,
too. Well done. But really, the real stars of the show are the people who listen.
True.
Who are building their product-based business and need genius help, yes, like from Noah McNeely with Product Quick Start.
Who are open to learning, right?
That's, yes.
If they're listening,
and speaking of being open to learning, let's open this show by welcoming in Noah.
Well, hello. I didn't know how long I started taking notes because I didn't know how long you guys were going
to
talk.
I decided to just jump right in. Okay. I think I'm fascinated by this topic, which is usually the case when you come in to the studio, because I'll be honest. So I'm going to go ahead and lay the cards out on the table and kind of let you know. As we talked about the topic, I was like, this can be incredibly educational, can really help, or we could bore the crap out of people with today's show. So I hope it's the former.
Which way would you like me to go with that?
We'll let the audience decide.
I can tell you it'll be really informative to the people that are stuck, that are going, who am I supposed to be calling? The rest, it might bore them.
Well, I think this is going to be one of those topics and one of those shows that the right people will go, holy cow, that was fantastic.
Yep.
And there might be some people who go, that was a little dry. I don't care. You listen to one of our other shows in the archives.
Yeah. We'll throw some jokes in.
Exactly.
They will be engineering jokes, so they'll still be quite dry.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. You want to start off with one? No, I'm just kidding.
No, we'll wait.
We'll save it. Save it. That's a tease. That's a tease for later. So Product Quick Start, productquickstart.com. Let's just reset. Tell everybody what you do before we get into the topic.
Well, what I do at Product Quick Start is I work mostly with entrepreneurs and inventors and some small companies to help them develop new products and prototype those products and design and engineer and manufacture those products. And I've been doing this about 25 years. So I guess my claim to fame is very entrepreneur focused, very efficiency focused. Most of my clients only have so much runway to get their product launched. Mm-hmm. So, That's how I've structured my business.
And the reason I asked you to reset what you do, because you've said it many times on many past episodes of this show.
Well, we've got like a million new listeners now, right?
That's right. And we encourage everybody to go back and listen to our archives, pick the topics you like. Definitely listen to Noah in some of the past shows, because he definitely talks you through the product development process. But the big question for today, which I asked your permission to set it up this way, as we're taping this, the Jeff Bezos space exploration happened with Captain Kirk, William Shatner, at 90 years old, being a passenger on that. And I said, in honor of that and in honor of Leonard Nimoy's old show from the 70s called In Search Of, and Captain Kirk's new show of recent years called The Unexplained, he just coughed over me. The Unexplained. That's okay.
It's inexplicable why I would cough.
That's unexplained. That's right. So that's why I thought that would be timely for using those as a backdrop for the big question of this show that you wanted to discuss, which is basically, what is engineering? What do you mean by engineering? What are the misconceptions of engineering? How do people look for the wrong engineers or bad engineers? And also all things engineering today. Yes. So we're going to break down an entire genre of study.
Yes. So I felt, where this topic came from was, I feel like we've talked about good engineers and bad engineers in the sense that, they're engineers that are really well suited, like myself, well suited to work with entrepreneurs and product developers and inventors. And then there's a bunch of other engineers that, not necessarily, they're not bad people. That's just not necessarily their focus. We've talked a lot about that. What we've never really talked about is what engineering even is, and what are the different flavors of engineering.
So you're saying we've left it unexplained up to this point.
I have. So
so we are in search of that answer today.
Yes.
All right. So what is engineering?
Well, I think the easiest way to think about engineering is it is applied mathematics and science. So you've got, you know, you've got mathematicians out there, and they do all sorts of, I guess, cool math stuff, but it's not necessarily applied into real world problems all the time. They would probably argue with me on that. Then you've got a lot of scientists out there that are kind of the same thing. They're in their labs. They're developing new laws of physics and all that sort of stuff. What engineers do is they take the stuff the mathematicians and the scientists have discovered, and then they really apply it into the real world, solving problems, creating new things, and
making it practical. Actually bringing it to life, right?
Because of those applications, then engineering kind of subdivides into a few different types of engineering, correct? So talk a little bit about those different types, because I think one of the things that might trip up a product-based development and an entrepreneur, an inventor, I need to talk to an engineer. Well, you might need to talk to a specific type of engineer.
Well, and please remind us what type of engineering degree you have, because we don't want people thinking that you're like the send me your idea companies online. No. You are an actual engineer.
Yes, believe it or not.
You are a hell of an engineer.
I am. So I'll start with myself and kind of work from the middle out. So this will be a middle out algorithm. And anyone that gets that reference, just chuckle to yourself.
That was good.
It's not appropriate for me to explain it on air. So I'm a mechanical engineer by education. And as sort of an aside and just to plug them, I'm actually on the advisory board for the George W. Woodruff School of Mechanical Engineering down at Georgia Tech, and they are consistently ranked in the top three or four of mechanical engineering schools in the country. So just a quick shout out to them. Had a lot of good experiences at Georgia Tech, and they're doing amazing things down there.
Amen. Preach, brother.
So my first degree was mechanical engineering, and that is probably – well, not probably. It is the oldest form of engineering study. All the other engineering disciplines really, whether they like to admit it or not, developed out of mechanical engineering. So if you go back to the 1800s, the very first engineering field was mechanical engineering. And mechanical engineering really deals with, I guess, the application of forces and mechanical
processes. Something works, maybe?
Yeah. Well, how so? You think about mechanical engineering as work and force and things like that. So gear systems and pistons, and traditionally, you know, like locomotives and all those things were developed by mechanical engineers. Anything that deals with the transfer of force and related areas. So it also gets into areas like mass transfer. So like mechanical engineers that don't do product development, a lot of them work in fields where they're making sure that the HVAC systems of very large buildings have enough flow, because that's a complicated mass flow problem. So we won't get into that. That's where, you know, there's mechanical engineers that are appropriate for inventors to work with, and some that are not. So that's sort of what mechanical engineering is, the grandfather of all engineering.
So you're telling us it's even more difficult to find the right engineer than just the specific type.
There's a lot of engineers who do a lot of different things.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of practical application in the world that needs to happen. Everything from how an airplane flies down to, you know, designing this pen I have in my hand. So
the application of mathematics and science is a broad field. That's
extremely broad.
Yes.
Anything you use, anything you buy, an engineer was probably involved somewhere and of some sort.
Right.
So the two fields of engineering I think that most entrepreneurs would need would be mechanical engineering and electrical engineering. There are a lot of other engineers as well. So just sort of to give a list, there's mechanical engineering, there's electrical engineering, there's civil engineering, industrial engineering, computer engineering. What else did I write them? Because I forget some of them too. Aerospace engineering.
Yep.
And there's materials engineering. There's a whole bunch of them. But the two that are probably most practical for most inventor entrepreneurs are mechanical engineering and electrical engineering. So mechanical engineers, in terms of product development, what we deal with, since we're all about applied force and materials and things like that, we're the ones that are typically going to develop your plastics and your metals and your assembly and how everything works together. Right now I'm working on a power tool that's got a bunch of gears in it where I'm taking power from a battery, running it through a motor, and then I've got to use these gears to change the power from that motor into exactly what I need to turn these blades and do this particular operation. So that's what mechanical engineers do. That's on the more complicated side, but it's also stuff as simple as how do I make my plastic box snap together? That's also a mechanical engineering application. Electrical engineers, on the other hand, they deal more with, and actually I think Tiffany's husband could probably talk about this more than I could. They deal with electric circuits and you know, the algorithms that go into those circuits and the, you know, all the little bits and pieces, which it's still engineering, of course, but it's not necessarily dealing with the large mechanical systems. It's dealing more with the functional aspects of a PC, of printed circuit boards and specking the right, you know, getting the most power out of that battery that I can and all those sorts of things.
And people underestimate, you know, they come up with a product that needs both of these. They underestimate the work involved by both of those engineers and that they both need to be skilled to bring something to market that works right.
Right. So just real quick, industrial engineering also grew out of mechanical engineering and some of the others. That's really more about systems and processes. There's a popular misconception that industrial design, which is what we'll talk about in a future episode, is industrial engineering. It's not. It's totally different things. Mm-hmm. Industrial engineering is more, they're going to be the ones that develop. Now, there's probably a lot of industrial engineers that work for Amazon to make sure that their logistics are all perfect. Mm-hmm. And then you've got civil engineers. They're the ones that develop your bridges and your highways and your buildings and things like that. Not typically someone that an inventor is going to work with, though there are some exceptions. I said there might be some engineering jokes. So one of the famous ones out of engineering schools is that mechanical engineers develop weapons, civil engineers develop targets.
Yeah.
So that's one way to think about that.
And I'm not trying to top your joke, but I guess I am. I always wanted to develop a comedy bit, especially for people who live in Atlanta, Georgia Tech, the great engineering school, which does civil engineering as one of its majors, sits right on the worst civilly engineered freeway system of two interstates, 75 and 85, that the state of Georgia and the state legislature early in the 50s and 60s when they resigned. Why don't we just stick them together?
Yeah, we don't. Why don't we take two extremely busy interstates and make them one for about 8 miles?
Right. And better yet,
in the busiest part of the city.
Exactly. And better yet, let's add another one to it as of a state road of 400. And my favorite is in the state minutes when they were first proposing 285, the circular highway around it, which again, Georgia Tech civil engineers, I pray, were not on that committee at all, because it's written in the state minutes that state senator said, I can no way conceive of any scenario of which this would need to be more than two lanes in either direction.
Oh my gosh.
285 at multiple places are 8 to 10 lanes on each side. So
of course, back then the population of the Atlanta metro was less than 1 million people.
Correct. Too. And so 75, 85 joining together right next to Georgia Tech's campus is a civil engineering nightmare. Enigma. So
yes.
Anyway,
unexplained.
So we've talked about the different types of engineering. Now, let's get into applying them a little bit more specifically to inventors developing products. You are a recovering mechanical engineer, which we'll talk about in a second. But just so given that backdrop as a great explanation and a good reference point, so mechanical engineers and electrical are the two main ones that inventors and product developers work with. Break that down a little bit more and what – do you want to subset even more from that?
So I would say, if I'm interpreting your question correctly, on a practical, from a practical standpoint, what the mechanical engineer would actually do for the product developer or for the inventor is they would be the ones typically that would build your CAD, your CAD models, your CAD assemblies. But there are a lot of people that can do CAD that aren't engineers, and that's okay. And frankly, there are a lot of people that are good engineers that don't have engineering degrees. That's I've met plenty of them too. That's fine as well. But I would say that the key there is building the CAD assemblies with the knowledge of mechanical engineering such that you know, well, this, if I make this plastic snap shape this way, it's going to work. But if I err too much in this direction, it's going to be more expensive than it should be. If I err too much in this direction, it's going to break. So things like that are very important. But that's a simple example. But then again, you've got situations where some products have a dozen or hundreds of different parts that all have to work together. So the mechanical engineer's job for product development would be to understand all those, make sure that the assembly works together well, build that all out in the virtual space of CAD. And then they would also, and what I do is that we would also take that into the real world of making a prototype and then working with the manufacturing engineers, mm-hmm. which are also typically mechanical engineers, just more focused on running manufacturing equipment, transitioning to them to make sure that it's mass produced.
And that's properly. The most important part that we always talk about, right? With product development is that sometimes people get the first three parts of that.
Right.
And they don't have that person in the factory that actually knows how it will come off the machine or how, you know, the many challenges they could face in manufacturing. And they've wasted so much right. time and money on the design.
Yeah. As a mechanical engineer, I can look at something and I can engineer it for prototyping and mm-hmm. not worry about
right.
mass production. And that's a much easier task, you know, and people ask me, why does it cost this much or why does it take this long to just build a prototype mm-hmm. of my widget? And I'll say, well, you know, I could build your prototype faster and cheaper, but that's not a prototype that reflects what you could then mass produce. Then
you
we're going to have to go back and do it all over.
Though, right?
It depends on who you're talking to. I would say some licensors are more sophisticated than others, and they can make mm-hmm. that leap from, okay, this is a working prototype. Mm-hmm. But others, they're very manufacturing oriented themselves, and they need to see that there mm-hmm. is a path to manufacturability. Yeah. So it just sort of depends.
So if engineering is the application of mathematics and science, clearly the right mechanical engineer to work with in developing your product is someone that is thinking of all the different applications, all the different ways to apply, whether this is going to not work because it's going to break or it's not going to work because it's too expensive. You're just doing application, but you're sure. bringing the application of all the different stuff mm-hmm. you've brought to market before, and it isn't just there's more to the engineering than the engineering, I guess would be the way to put it. Right. So I'm going to use that as a segue into, as you've sat here as the genius at this table and try to help educate us and work with us and the clients you've worked with through this show and even before this show and all that. Why do you sometimes refer to yourself then as a recovering engineer?
Well, I think that relates to what you just said about there's more to the engineering than just the engineering. I would say there's more to the product development than mm-hmm. just the engineering. I'm not a recovering engineer so much because I still very much use engineering in everything I do.
Yeah, you are on the board, you said. You are still involved, damn it, Tech.
But what I mean by that is I am not focused just on what you would typically consider the mainstream engineering that mm-hmm. you'd find in the engineering textbooks, because the economics, you know, that's applied mathematics too. And that's very important. And like I said, we've got to balance mm-hmm. the, hey, don't make it so weak it breaks right. versus the don't make it so strong it's too expensive side. And also the other things that just by experience being a product developer for a long time, We have to look at, and this will bleed into the next episode too, I think, but we have to look at the other aspects of successful product development. I can engineer you something that will be tough as nails and super cheap, but it's probably just going to be a steel box. You're not going to be able to necessarily sell that steel box unless you sell steel boxes. It's not necessarily going to make it out into the marketplace as a consumer product or something else. So I call myself a recovering engineer because that's really just one aspect of being a product developer, which is really what I consider myself.
I'm going to give an Easter egg hunt and a shout out. There's a past show in our archives from a while ago where I've probably referred to it a couple of times, the surgical table for the field, right? Yeah. As a pure mechanical engineer, oh man, the mechanical engineering behind this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But there's so many practical and economic and pieces and okay, mm-hmm. the mechanical engineer appreciates this.
It was as a fantastic intellectual esoteric exercise.
Correct.
With zero real world practicality.
Yes, it's for the battlefield and it costs $2.5 million each the way you want to design it. Yeah.
For the battlefield, right. The cost isn't a big deal. But the problem with that particular item was it was by someone who claimed to be an engineer, but really he would just read all the engineering textbooks and thought they knew exactly what they were doing. And they did on a level. They built this perfect thing, this one perfect thing.
One. Or $70,000.
It could not be reproduced because every single part, for it to work,
that's right, the calibration.
Every single part had to be exact. Like it couldn't be off by a half millimeter, which is typical in manufacturing. It had to be, there's no tolerance at all. It's got to be exactly this.
Right.
And it's got like 800 parts. I'm like,
wow.
That's
go search
that. You can't do that. That will never be a product. So you can hand make these one by one in your garage, in your workshop, one every 6 months. That's such a good
lesson for our listeners. I mean, that one story
that I brought up. Thank you.
To know that how many Noah people told. Have done that. I mean, so many people have done that on a smaller scale. You know, they haven't done it with 800 pieces and that kind of cost, but they have, you know.
Your product will never be perfect. It will never be manufactured perfect unless you're NASA or somebody and you're willing to make 100 and throw 99 away to get that one perfect.
And how many times have we on this show, whether it's Shark Tank Spotlight with FSI or talking with Noah and his stories that he's had of working with so many people, we just recorded a recent episode about, ideas that die on the drawing board. That doesn't mean that it's got to be perfect, or that doesn't mean that you have to plan until you get every single, sometimes the best answer is, good job trying to get it off the drawing board. Mm-hmm. This isn't going to work unless you're willing to do this, and this. I love the balance of our shows because we hear stories of Shark Tank Spotlight and Small Business Spotlight, and I solve this problem by doing this, this, and this. And then some of the, I solve the answer by finding out that it was going to cost me $1 million if I really wanted to make this small plastic thing.
I solved a $5 problem with a $100 solution.
Yeah. Exactly.
I've had that conversation.
Hashtag that. That needs to become a hashtag or a tagline on your, $100 solution to a $5 problem. I'll help you not spend the money to do that. So, and every time you say all the things, I think of all the things you've brought up and all the things we've talked about, it's application, it's application, it's application, it's application. Your main job is the application of all the esoteric, stuff that people are, I got it. I know. No. Keep working at it.
Yeah. You don't necessarily want to work with the smartest person in the room. You want to work with the person that knows how to get your product out of the room and into manufacturing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of very smart people that can tell you everything you could possibly ever want to know about the physics of your product. That's useless. Mm. Well, it's mostly useless. It's impractical. It doesn't make you any money.
Right. Speaking of not being the smartest person in the room, I will then take that challenge. I was putting it on me this time. But I think you just knocked your water bottle into Sorry.
It's a competition.
Live up to my name.
Sorry. I'll shake some ice by the microphone to make us all feel better. Okay. So being not the smartest person in the room, I will then ask maybe the worst podcast question of all time by saying, okay, is there anything we're forgetting that you want to make sure and bring up about what is engineering? That's a horrible question. So, cause it makes you go,
a million things, but nothing at all, right?
Yeah, 5 years, my whole life of study, I've put it down into a 20-minute interview. Yeah. I don't know. What else do you want to know?
I think the one thing, despite the fact I'm very heavily involved in the school down at Georgia Tech, and I have enormous respect for education, on engineering education, I would say that the main thing is that's only part of the puzzle, or a part of having a good product development partner. The experience is important. And this practical, I would say it's almost strategy is important. One thing that a very good professor, he told me this, he told the whole class a story. This is a long time ago, is that, they were going to give out grades, and it's like, okay, you've got to figure, I can't even remember what the problem was. We got to figure out how strong this rope has to be. And so one team went off and they did all this math and all this calculation and et cetera, et cetera. And the other team went off, they got a bucket of concrete and tried different ropes to figure out which one would work. And they solved the problem in a day. Whereas the theoretical team, a week later, they were still working on it and they didn't get the right solution. So it's a very important lesson about mentality and approach. That's actually, they were using it as a lesson about prototyping, but it's a very important lesson about mentality and approach. It's not just about the theory of engineering. It's about engineering is applied mathematics and science, but you've also got to apply engineering.
And you do a lot of that. I mean, you have your own lab that you go into and you test some of this stuff. So it's not just you saying, well, it looks good on the computer. I think we're good to go. You're actually testing it.
Yeah. And I have the scars to prove it. Yeah. Too, so.
Have you ever thought about calling it your lair? As Dwight Schrute said, I really would like to have a lair.
If it were underground, I would definitely call it a lair.
I think underground is one of the preconceptions of needing it to be a lair.
I think my prototyping lab has too many windows to be a lair. Yes.
Too much natural and artificial light to be called a lair. So for now, it's just the prototype lab. But I guess we could call it the... Would you consider yourself a mad scientist or... You're not even a scientist because you're the application of
occasionally I'm an angry engineer,
but you are still a hell of an engineer. So
yes, he is.
Well done. All right. So, productquickstart.com. If you want to work with the right engineer, you need to be working with Noah. You're not the only right engineer they can work with.
Well, you should at least be talking to me. If I'm not the right engineer for you, I probably know somebody.
Yeah. Yep. Know somebody who can, and they're probably a rambling wreck. So, and you know, they could also be maybe from MIT, the Georgia Tech of the North, you know, and the other, what other Georgia Tech joke should we say? Did you know why they couldn't hold the Christmas pageant at UGA? Actually, we won't give that one.
I don't know that one.
Yeah. I won't say that one on air. Can I? Tiffany, do you trust me?
I don't know. You tell me.
So UGA couldn't hold their, they couldn't do their Christmas play last year because they couldn't find three wise men and a virgin. Anyway, Noah, for those people who want to find out more, they should go to productquickstart.com.
Yes.
And there is a contact us form. They can talk about what they're working on, what they need your help with. The more they fill it out, the easier, the more effective that first contact.
There's three things.
Good.
So there's the contact us form. That's just basic. Like everybody has. That's helpful, but not the most useful. More useful to me, there are two at the top of the website. There's a section called Forms. There is an assessment form that asks a lot of questions that helps me prepare for a call with you. And don't worry, it's no probing questions about, you know, where you went to school or anything like that. It's just about your business. And then there's also an NDA there, which you, if you're uncomfortable sharing anything, which you should be, that's fine. There's an NDA there you can download, fill out, and we'll be good to go.
Perfect. Thank you for always being the genius at the table and helping us. And I don't think anybody was bored. I think it was incredibly helpful. Tiffany, for those people.
It's funny because I'm actually on my phone messaging someone who wants to talk to Noah that I met through LinkedIn. So trying to make that happen right now so that they can connect and develop a product.
Fantastic. And if they want to learn more about starting a product-based business, they can go to TiffanyKrumans.com. There's a fantastic course that they can be a part of. There actually was a secret code that I gave out a few episodes ago. I don't know if anyone's used that code. I don't want to know the answer to that in case it hurts my feelings and my pride. But go to TiffanyKrumans.com, find out more about what she does. And this show, of course, is our give back to the product-based business community. We want to support you in any way that we can, whether that's working with Noah, whether that's taking the course from Tiffany, whether that's talking to one of our other partners, or even if you want to talk to an independent financial advisor. I can't give you my website because it hasn't been approved by compliance, but you can search Stephen Julian Financial Advisor Georgia, and you'll find out more about what I do. If you want to do your own podcast, don't call me. I'm slightly annoying with Tiffany, and she would tell you that it's probably not worth working with me. But who you do need to work with is Jody Smith, jodysmith.com, jodeysmith.com. He helps people podcast. So for Noah, for Tiffany, for Jody, this is Stephen saying we will catch you next time right here on Product Genius.
is that entertaining at least?